Off the ball.
Rugby.
I think Munster are in a bad state. I think Munster have been in a badly run organisation for a while. And it pains me to say this, I don't like saying it. I love Munster. I mean, I cut my teeth as rugby core the Irish Times in the noughties.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Turning our attention back to the big story from the weekend, and that is the fact that Rory McIlroy has gone back to back. Delighted to say John Hogan is with us this morning. John, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Nice to be with you.
Will you give us some historical context on this? We obviously saw the list of names. It was Nicklaus, it was Faldo, it was Tiger, and now it's Rory, and it feels like he deserves to be in that company.
Absolutely. I mean, he's though there is a little bit of confusion this morning, as people are now saying that he and Faldo are tied with the most major wins by a European. But Rory's got a wee bit to go. Harry Vardin has still got him by one. Harry Vardin won 7. But your point is certainly valid. I mean, Rory is certainly the best European golfer since the Second World War. There's absolutely no question about that. And he may go on to be the best of all time. I wouldn't bet against that.
It's the back-to-back thing that seems to be so difficult as well. And that's the sign that you have managed your game really well over a long period of time, and also over a short period of time. For I don't know why it is that the Masters has been so difficult, apart from that list that I had earlier. So that's the other side of this historical context, is that the Grand Slam came last year, the back-to-back comes this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw yesterday evidence of why it's so difficult. I mean, how many times did the lead change yesterday? How many weird and wonderful things happened? You know, there were so many guys could have won. Rory was the one who came out in the end. But I mean, that is why it's so difficult, is that the golf course lends itself to so many exciting moments, and there's so many things can happen, both good and bad, that the chances of coming through twice in a row are minimised, I think, by the golf course, by the margins for error that are so small there on that golf course.
What is it about Sunday at Augusta, John, that Morikawa and Hatton can go and knock 6 birdies in a row in playing the exact same course an hour earlier, but when it comes to the leaders and that pressure gets turned on, like, I know it's the biggest tournament and I know there's ghosts flying around Augusta and so on, but these guys play at high pressure all the time, not least even in the other majors. It's almost universal. It's the year it doesn't happen is the one that surprises us, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you touched on it there, that it's the pressure or the lack of pressure it enables the guys who are not thinking they've got a chance to win. I mean, you give top golfers, you know, 9 holes of no pressure golf, they'll go around in nothing, some of them. I mean, they'll go for it. And that's what happened, yeah, certainly with Hatton yesterday. I mean, he was attacking in ways that he would never have done had he been in Rory's position, for example. I mean, you'd have been playing a bit more safe, you know, towards the safe side of the pins on those slopey greens. And that's the difference. And it's the same in every tournament, but it's exacerbated by the golf course at Augusta. It's just the margin for error is so small and the potential for disaster is never very far away.
Yeah. We saw what happened to Shane Lowry yesterday, John, and the reason I mentioned that is just because that is a normal enough thing to happen when things go wrong early at the high pressure moments at the end of the Masters. And when Rory drops that, you know, fourth shot or on the sixth hole, he looks a broken man. He looks like as if it's just not coming back. He's backed up a double bogey with another bogey two holes later. For him to kind of go and play the golf he played from 7 to 13 on the back of that, it's a remarkable turnaround. It is not something that's very common for a player to be able to just switch it on like that.
Well, that's the X factor that separates the truly great ones from the rest. I mean, Shane Lowry is obviously a hell of a golfer, but that's 2 years in a row now that he's done something like that at the Masters. I think he shot 81 in the last round last year as well, and he's had a couple of you know, high profile, you know, failures, if you like, when he should have won tournaments this year and didn't. I'm a wee bit worried about him, actually. I mean, that'll be in his head now a little bit. And the sooner he wins a tournament going forward, the better to get rid of these, you know, this memory. I mean, 80 is an awful lot. I mean, you say there was pressure, and obviously there is pressure. And again, I keep going back to the golf course, but 80 is an awful lot of shots for a player of that level.
Sure. But in terms of what Rory was, I suppose Shane's almost an unfair example, but even when it does go wrong, as it did for Rory in the early stages, for him to just, like, I just think at the seventh tee, he stands there, it's all kind of gone. He's gone all the way back down to 9 under. I think 12 is leading it at that stage. And suddenly from like 24 hours earlier, having a 6-shot lead, to suddenly being 3 shots off on the seventh hole. And he just whacks it. Suddenly he finds his driving. I don't think he misses another fairway until the 15th. And he goes birdie, birdie with two exquisite iron shots into 7 and 8 as well. It's that flick of a switch that I just don't think is there for too many golfers, when it's clear that there's a psychological element to it after what happened in the first 6 holes.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that period in the middle of the round is what made the difference between losing and winning for Rory. I mean, he, as you pointed out there, I mean, he went from, you know, making some pretty sloppy mistakes early on to suddenly he played 7 or 8 holes in a row there and didn't really miss a shot. I mean, that on that golf course, I keep repeating myself, I know, but on that golf course, that is so difficult. To not make a mistake for that number of holes in a row. And that was the difference between winning and losing. You look at the guy who was second. I mean, he gave Rory a 12-shot start after halfway. And by the way, don't minimise just how impressive the fact is that Rory got to the winning score at halfway in a tournament in a major championship. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. I mean, that just shows you the quality of the golf he played in the first 2 days. But Scheffler's play on the par fives generally was terrible for somebody as good as he is, and that's why he didn't win. I mean, I bet you he was a hard man to be around last night, and maybe Cam Young to a lesser extent, but Scheffler was the one who'll be sitting with the biggest regrets last night.
What did Rory do on Saturday? How did he go from, like, absolutely taming Augusta on the Friday? So how much of it is mental, how much of it is tactical as well? Like, not fully being able to just dial it back 15% to play safe and manage your way through it and keep your lead. What happened in retrospect, do you think?
Well, it's a subconscious thing. I mean, it has to be, you know, even if he's on the practice range before he goes out, and he's thinking to himself, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, play, you know, attacking aggressive golf when you can. But subconsciously, he's 6 shots ahead, and that's one of the most difficult things to do when you're playing golf, is to keep going when you've got that lead. Subconsciously, you're going to just get a little bit more defensive, and if you're playing a little bit more conservatively on that course, it's often a good idea, but it does lead to, if you play conservatively and you miss, suddenly you're in a really bad place. And that's what happened to Rory 2 or 3 times on the Saturday. I thought he did well to get round in 73, to be honest, the way he played. It could have been an awful lot worse.
Yeah, because there was a bit of scrambling that was going on when the lead was getting away from him. To get back into the final pairing is actually really psychologically important. You get to see everybody else.
Yeah.
And also, they are always waiting for your score to go up on the board. And it did feel as if the occasion of being the leader in the final round for Justin Rose, he much preferred to be the hunter. When he was the hunted, it was like, oh, I have it now. I have it in my grasp to win this thing.
Yeah, well, we should never underestimate the pairing aspect of it. I mean, Nick Faldo talked endlessly about his six back in 96 to the point where I'd almost had enough of it. But anyway, back then, maybe one of the most important putts that he holed that week was on the 18th green in the third round. He holed a birdie putt to get himself into the last pairing with Greg Norman, which was very important, obviously, as it turned out. I mean, Norman had to look him in the eye rather than have him playing up ahead, which I think for Norman made a huge difference. I mean, Faldo's a pretty imposing figure, or he was then, and the way that the two played kind of indicated that how important it was for Faldo to be doing what he did right in front of Greg Norman. And again, you're right about it does make it... you can go either way on this, actually. I mean, Justin Rose, I'm not so sure that Justin Rose would have wanted to play with Rory yesterday.
Were you surprised that Justin didn't show a little bit more composure? I suppose he played one bad hole. It's not as if he completely collapsed or anything like that, but he was almost out of contention as soon as he duffed a chip on 12. It did feel all week as though if anybody is going to just hold the consistent, if the consistent line was going to be what won this tournament, Rose was going to be the person who did it. And so I think it shocked us all that he was duffing chips, I suppose, once he got his hands on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's classic. For whatever reason, he started making the mistakes that people make when they don't win. And that was the difference with the way that Rory played, as we touched on in the middle of the round. That's what winners do.
Mm.
And that's the difference. But again, never underestimate the golf course, that golf course. I mean, the greens, you can argue, are a wee bit silly. They're not really designed to be that fast. But it is a way of keeping the scores up, given how far that these guys hit the ball now. I mean, they're hitting an awful lot of short irons and wedges into greens at even, 500 yard holes now. And the green speed is just one way of keeping the scores within what the organisers would see as an acceptable range.
What will Rose's recollection of this tournament be versus last year? Obviously, he gets into a playoff last year, so at that point, they're both standing on the 18th with the opportunity to win it. This year, he had the lead outright for a moment on the final day. Which of these hurts more, do you think?
Well, having just said that Scheffler would be in a grumpy mood on Sunday night, I think Justin will be the one with the biggest regrets because, I mean, like it or not, he is running out of time. I mean, he's already entering the black hole of professional golf, which is the period between 45 and 50, where 45, you hit 45 and you're doing really well to be competitive at that level. And you can't say enough about how he's played the last couple of years to be that way. But people in their late 40s don't normally contend in major championships. It's a very unusual thing. And by the time, because you're in that, as I say, that black hole between you're too old to be competitive most of the time on the regular tour, but you're still too young to play with the seniors. So he'll have the biggest regrets, you'd have to think, because of his age.
Can I ask what this does for golf in general? So you have McIlroy, winning at Augusta back-to-back puts him in that really front and centre place where I think golf wants him to be in the truly post-Tiger era, especially after the last couple of weeks. He's the box office, he's the one, and now he's also adding the majors and the biggest major to that. But you also then have Scheffler perhaps not being at his most dominant self and doing that bit of chasing makes him a lot more interesting. I don't really know about the chasing pack. Again, we're probably talking about if Justin Rose is still the most interesting, then that's not ideal. But Cameron Young showed a little bit this week, if he could step up, and you've got kind of an underbelly of guys that could come true, I suppose. It's if McIlroy doesn't cut this compelling figure that it could go either way and ultimately does get those wins to keep it interesting, golf is probably not in the most thrilling of places at the moment, whereas literally with just this one person, it is completely box office.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to underestimate the importance of Rory. I mean, people are engaged by Rory far more than any other player, I mean, Scheffler included. I mean, I was at the Australian Open in December last year at Royal Melbourne when the place was moving with people, and kids especially, simply because Rory was there. I mean, he carried the whole thing. I mean, I've been to many Australian Opens over the years, and that's by far the best one, simply because he was there, given the fact that he was going there as the Masters champion as well, which was a big part of it. But you're right, he is so important because there isn't, I'm not sure there is anybody else. In fact, I had a discussion with Rory. I was at Dubai, the Dubai Desert Classic in, what was it, end of January, February, and I lucky enough to get 25 minutes chatting with Rory in the locker room on a varied variety of subjects. And one of the things that we touched on, and this is where he and I disagreed, I made the point, I was critical of Scheffler because Scheffler, he doesn't owe the game because he's the world's number one. But I think he has a responsibility when he's in that position to go and spread the word a little bit. I mean, Scotty Scheffler goes to the Scottish Open and the Open in July in the UK, and that's the only time he leaves America. I mean, is it really too much to ask for, you know, at least 1 week a year he goes somewhere just because it's the right thing to do and spreads the word a little bit? Because Rory, again, on the opposite side of that coin, Rory does that, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. You know, I'm sure he's getting paid to do it, but he does it, and Scheffler doesn't. But Rory stuck up for Scheffler. He disagreed with me on that. He says that Scheffler, he can do whatever the hell he wants, basically. But I feel quite strongly that the world's number one golfer has a responsibility to go elsewhere, to go outside America, at least once a year. Just show face and let the kids see you and, as I say, spread the word.
Where is Liv in all this?
Well, I mean, if I'm typical, and I probably am, I'm no more interested in Liv now than I was the day it started. It's got an awful long way to go. I mean, I've said this before, and I've written this, and maybe said it on here before. Forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I think that when the European Tour's deal with the PGA Tour is up, I think it's next year, and I think the PGA Tour are showing signs of getting tired of propping up the European Tour financially, which I wouldn't blame them on. But the European Tour have got an opportunity, I think. I would like to see them get into bed with Liv, Asian Tour, Australian Tour, basically everybody except the PGA Tour, and create something that actually is a viable alternative to the PGA Tour. And I think Rory at his time of life, and he's, you know, he's got the house back in Wentworth now, he's going to be living in the UK most of the time. I think Rory might be the figurehead that could lead the way on that. I mean, I'm talking off the top of my head on that, but it wouldn't surprise me, because if I'm Rory, I'm looking at the PGA Tour and I'm thinking to myself, you know what, I've done everything on that tour multiple times, there's nothing left for me now. I want to go and win all these national opens that he keeps talking about, and the way to do that would be to tour around the world and play on a different circuit.
It's an interesting idea about Liv, though, and it kind of links the last two questions, because if you're looking at who is the box office alternative to McIlroy and Scheffler, kind of don't know if there's anybody. Like, DeChambeau is obviously one of those options, mm. and he's going to have his unique brand that will interest people, again, that aren't hardcore golf fans. And actually, even a little bit this week, and he wasn't playing the villain this week, unfortunately, but Tyrrell Hatton has something about him that stands out a mile, and if he could like get to that next level and get a little bit of success, he could be a big star, even if it is as a villain, you know. So, but if two of those possible people who could keep the game going are on this ostracized tour that nobody watches, then that's not very good for the whole thing at all.
Yeah, I mean, there are players, you know, if he dotted around the world who are nobody's on Rory's level. I mean, Rory's by far the biggest draw in any country you care to mention. But if you go to Australia, Adam Scott, his profile in Australia is really high, for example. And people will show up, will buy tickets because Adam Scott's playing. I'm sure it's the same with Matsuyama is playing in Japan. So, but Rory is far and away the most important, you know, part of this discussion. And as I say, I'm thinking, you know, I'm putting words in his mouth, but it'd be interesting to know if he would be up for moving on a little bit from the PGA Tour and maybe just playing in America enough to get ready for the majors.
I mean, it would be a massive turnaround for him to turn his back on the PGA Tour, considering he's on the record about hating Liv, but maybe if it was the European Tour that was actually the buffer zone there, and it's actually an expanded European Tour, That might change things. Either way, the future of golf is in safe hands when it comes to Rory. Just in terms of his legacy, getting to the six and matching Faldo and being on level with all those other great golfers, you know, we were speculating earlier, he wants nine. That would put him on Gary Player's level. What do you think is realistic now?
Well, if I'm Rory, I'm thinking double figures. I think nine is conservative. There is no reason. I mean, he's 36. He's right at his peak now. He's as good a player now as he's ever been, maybe a better player than he's ever been. And he's certainly got more experience. I mean, I don't think the young Rory playing the way he did at over the weekend, certainly at Augusta this week, that the young Rory would... I don't see the young Rory winning that Masters, but the Rory, the mature Rory... with a better short game, for example. I mean, his short game was sensational because it had to be. I mean, I think I've got the numbers here. He hit 55% of fairways and only 48 greens in regulation, which means he's, every three holes he's missing a green. I mean, the fairway hit stat is always a bit misleading because there's always questions of, well, how much did he miss by? Where did he miss? You know, you can miss the fairway by 3 inches and that counts. You know, there's questions based on that. But... given those numbers, if you look at those numbers, I mean, it's an extraordinary performance to win 48 greens in regulation out of 72 at Augusta, and you win the tournament. I can't believe that's happened too often.
Now, that put on 16, when you think about it like that, obviously is off the green, but it's one of his best shots. So, even in the commentary there, like, oh, this needs to go... 20 feet above the hole, and he's actually aiming 30 feet above the hole. So the commentators had watched every single shot on that green all day, called it 50% wrong. Rory called it bang on right and still missed on the underside to give himself the easiest tap-ins.
I mean, that was important. I mean, 16 and 17 in the last round there, I mean, he got up and down from off the green with no stress whatsoever. If he had the four-footer, I mean, he could have missed a four-footer. Oh. Anybody could miss a four-footer on those games. But he made it so easy for himself. And that, I think, is one of the biggest differences between young Rory and the mature Rory that we see now.
He didn't have to hole a putt since 13, I think. And I think, given what happened on 18 last year, if you have to, an eight-footer, he didn't leave himself with that, which is massive. Do you think he goes... We're talking about how many majors he wins. I'm just wondering, does Rory look at... things differently now at this stage of his career, and like, would world number one be on his agenda, would you say, this year, or is it just like, forget about that and just like target these tournaments here and there and try to be the best major player and Ryder Cup player I can be for the next few years?
Yeah, well, I think I'm sure he's got priorities. I think the Ryder Cup is always going to be high on his list. He's gone from the young Rory who called it an exhibition to, is there anybody more passionate than Rory about the Ryder Cup? So going forward, we've got another 10 years of Rory playing in Ryder Cups. I just think that he's going to have to come up with a list, and I'm sure he's already done that. And I think the National Opens is something that he's already mentioned. I think that will play a role going forward. He'll go to India and Australia. I mean, he's already won the Australian Open, but he'll go to places like that just to tick them off his list, if you like. And I see that as more of his future than playing in regular season, PGA Tour events that have no real historical value.
John, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
My pleasure.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.